Hi, and welcome to the How Not to Think podcast, the show that gets you thinking about thinking on a variety of different topics. I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and I'm really delighted today to have two experts with me, David Smith, a sociologist and former Navy pilot, and Brad Johnson, a psychology professor, and looking at their work, and particularly their new book, which is called Good Guys, How Men Can Be Better Allies for Women in the Workplace. And I'm going to use this episode as part of a three-part episode on women in the workplace, too. So, gentlemen, over to you. It's great to have you on the show, and I'm delighted to be able to talk about your book and your work. So, yeah. Brad, what...
I'll jump right in here, Howard. Thanks for having Dave and I today. We've been looking forward to this conversation. So we are, as you said, a couple of academics, both a couple of former Navy guys, and both people who have become very interested in our professional careers about women in the workplace, about work-family integration, in my case, about mentoring and gender and what that looks like. And it was really when Dave came to the Naval Academy as a sociologist after his Navy career that we began collaborating on this issue. And one of the very first things we noticed was that if you look at the evidence on mentorship, women get less of it. They get less sponsoring. The quality of those relationships is often not quite as good. Men, for a number of reasons, are reluctant to engage in mentorships with women in the workplace. And so we did the research and wrote the book Athena Rising about how men can be better at mentoring women. And so there we were out on the road talking to groups of men about being better and leaning in mentoring. And then Me Too comes along. And and as if we didn't have enough hurdles already to get guys, you know, into this space and deliberately engaging, now we had a number of false narratives coming out of Me Too. You know, women are dangerous, can't interact with them in the workplace. They frequently make false accusations. You know, all of these things not true. Dave and I have spent the last 2 years reminding men that Me Too is really simple. It's about women asking to come to work and not be assaulted or harassed. It's a really low bar for men to get over. And there is a lot in this for guys. One of the big surprise findings from our work with Athena Rising was that men who mentor women and men who have female mentors are just better. Their job performance improves, they're better at communication, their emotional intelligence tends to go up a bit, they're better networked. And then, you know, interestingly, all those skills transport home as well, right? So I don't leave those at the workplace. So that was kind of our mentoring beginning. And maybe I'll toss it over to Dave to talk about our new work around allyship.
Yeah, thanks. And thanks, Howard, for having us again here to talk about this and what we think is really important information. And as we move forward from this pandemic and the work from home situation that we're in now, as we begin to kind of re-envision what work is broadly and how we can make it work better for everyone, I think this is part of the broader conversation we need to be having. But as Brad mentioned, you know, we were on the road doing a lot of this work around mentoring and sponsoring, and then suddenly Me Too happened, and we found ourselves also being pulled into these broader conversations about how men can show up in the workplace as allies. And so not just in the narrow area of mentoring and sponsoring, but just at whatever level, from if you're a brand new employee in your organization all the way up to if you're in the executive suite of your organization, the different things that we could be doing and thinking about as we show up as allies and really understanding what that looks like. And what was interesting as we talked to men about this in particular was, you know, there's a small group of men out there. I hope it's becoming smaller group that don't understand and don't want to understand. And we're not really speaking to that group. There's really a large middle group of men out there in our country and in the world broadly today that want to be allies. And they do, they're in favor of gender equity and gender equality in the workplace. And many times because they, again, important women in their lives, whether it's their family members or their peers and colleagues or their mentors or mentees, but they really do want to be better allies in the workplace and make it a better place to work for everyone, but they're really not sure what to do or how to do it. And as Brad said, it, you know, after Me Too, we often get into this world of concern about making a mistake or anxiety about, you know, a relationship, what that might look like with women in the workplace. And so we find, you know, a lot of men are out there are on the sidelines waiting to understand, you know, what is it that I should be doing? The other part of that group is what we call the allyship gap. And this is a group of men out there who, because they believe that they are allies already, or they just because they believe in gender equality broadly for all the right reasons, they think that they're already doing the work. But, you know, as we've learned, I think, especially in our country over the last few months, that around race, that it's not enough to just believe and to say that you're in favor of racial equality or gender equality. We actually have to be out there looking for how the system, and this is a lot of the systemic actions that we need to be taking to dismantle and disrupt some of these biases and the systems that are creating the inequities in the workplace today. And that group of guys out there, they think they're doing it, but they're not. And we find this in a lot of research where, again, women will tell us that no, it's not really happening as much. And we call this the allyship gap. And so there's a process of eliminating or reducing that gap as well.
Yeah, and there's always a big difference between, you know, thinking something and actually doing it, right? And one of the great things about your book is that actually not only does it highlight that, it actually gives some really practical steps for guys in the workplace of what they can actually do. Lots of great advice there, from simple things to, hey, you know, if you hear a unreasonable comment directed towards a woman, don't just stand there and say nothing, and don't stand there and be patronizing and say, oh, you shouldn't have said that to her. You own it, right? And say, that is insulting to me as well as her. Yeah. And I really think that's good. I mean, clearly you guys are working at the real practical end of making this work rather than just talking about it, right?
Yeah. I think that's well said. And that's certainly our aspiration, Howard. That's what we would love to be known for. We're two academic nerds, let's be honest. So we do like the research and we enjoy doing that. But our research approach really is qualitative, it's practical. You know, for the Good Guys book, we went out and interviewed lots and lots of women, and these were often women at the very top of their fields. And we asked them, tell us what a male ally looks like to you in very behavioral terms, right? Let's get very sort of tangible. If we were going to replicate his behavior, how would you describe what he actually does? And so we collected all these interviews, and then in the cases where they nominated a male who was really doing it well, we got an interview with those guys too and asked them many of these same behavioral questions. What do you actually do? And so that's what the book is really intended to be, is sort of a toolbox or a practical guide for guys about, you know, what do I do? And in terms of those practical strategies, we sort of break them down into two broad categories, Howard. They're the interpersonal, you know, how do I show up as a man for women that I work with? You know, just what's my presence? What's my relational style? How do I do with listening and avoiding assumptions and showing real collegiality and friendship? But then there's the public systemic piece, and that's often the tougher one for men, right? How do I, as you were just saying, Howard, how do I disrupt things in the workplace that are not okay? And how do I own that? How do I develop my situational awareness so I see inequities that are happening, even in the everyday meeting, you know, which happens, you know, too many times for us to count every day, when there are little slights or dismissals or moments where women are not included, how do I get really aware and then say something? And then there's, of course, the broader systems. You know, when I see policies and procedures that persistently disadvantage my female colleagues, how do I call that out, and how do I recognize it?
And I was very impressed with the practicality, the real practicality of the Good Guys book, because I think that's what we need. We can talk all we want. We can come up with all sorts of concepts, some of which probably are overstated, misunderstood. It really comes down, if we really want to make a change, we got to do something differently. And I think you spell that out really well. David, were you surprised at all by the things that you heard women talk about that they would like to see in the workplace, or was that not that much of a surprise to you?
Yes and no. And so I'll cover the no first. And so there's a lot of the challenges that women have in the workplace that are well documented and written about extensively. But you know, on occasion, some of these things would come up, and this really gets at the first kind of the first step in allyship that we talk to about, with men about in particular, is that you've got to begin to develop an awareness of what other people's experiences are like in the workplace. And that's, you know, women is just one group of people that are different from us. And certainly there are lots of others that we have to begin to develop an awareness and enter into that. As Brad said, we have to work on our listening skills and our learning orientation about how we show up and not making assumptions about these things. And really listen to understand and see what it is we don't know and what we don't understand. Because until you have that awareness, it's really hard to close this gap. And it's hard to, I think, for many men that want to help and want to be a part of the solution, you have to understand what the problem is. You have to see the problem. And it sounds so simple, but it really isn't quite as simple as we might think, because as guys, most of us, you know, we wander around at work and we're not dealing with a lot of these issues and these challenges and these slights and behaviors that are again, directed at women in many cases. I'll give you an example. You know, one of the ones that Brad and I learned about that, and we heard this the first time when we were doing our research with Athena Rising, and then we heard more of it again when we were doing the work for Good Guys. Women would tell us about in group settings and group dynamics, you know, were meetings, again, back when we were back in person more, but it also happens in Zoom meetings too today, in virtual settings. But often women, when their contributions, they're talking, and when they're not being interrupted and they do get a chance to talk, often their contributions are not valued in the same way as men's are. And we see this with ideas being stolen, or, you know, women would tell us over and over again about how they would make a contribution of an idea about how to do something, something novel or innovative. And everybody just be like, whatever. And then three guys later down the line, it's the greatest idea since sliced bread. It's been kind of repackaged as his own, and, you know, and it's kind of the stolen idea. And it doesn't only happen to women. It does happen to men as well. There's a little bit of a, you know, a status or seniority dynamic that comes into play as well. So it does happen to other people. But I think for many of us who are more of the majority, I remember the first time I heard that, I was like, wow, I've never had that happen to me. And I immediately asked Brad, we compared notes, like, you ever had that happen? Nope. But if I had never heard that from a woman, how would I ever know to look for it? And then now that I know what to look for, I've heard it before. Now I've seen it. Right. Now I get a chance to go, okay, well, now what do I want to do about this? And think about, all right, so what are my options? Who is this guy? How do I want to handle this? I need to handle it right now in the moment, in the meeting. Do I want to handle it later? And there's lots of, again, of these situational factors, relational factors that we like to think about before we decide how we want to be most effective in handling things like that. So yeah, absolutely. There were lots of things that we had seen and read about before, but there were some things that we had not. And it was really eye-opening. And I think that was the key part of, you know, what we were trying to bring out in the book, was these things that we all need to understand and be more aware of.
Yeah, by the way, Howard, that the women that we interviewed actually shared terms for that phenomenon we had never heard. So having your idea bro-propriated or being he-peated, right? By a dude. So we learn so much about these things that we just were blind to. We just missed them.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm mindful of the very first essay I had to write in an undergraduate psychology degree, which was, how may intergroup conflict be reduced? And of course, the short answer was that interact with each other and get to know each other better. And it's amazing. That was, way back in the last millennium, but, it's so true. I mean, so many of these problems we have are simply because we don't interact very well with people or at all. We don't know them. We just have these simple stereotypes and biases that are, hopelessly misguiding. And if you have that, how can you possibly have a meaningful relationship with somebody? You can't, yeah. Right? I mean, that's what your work is showing, I think. You've got to get in there and find out what is going on and really try to understand that. Yeah. Something else I was interested in was, you also make the point, which seems obvious in retrospect, but might not otherwise, about how the guy in the workplace, how he relates to women and like his women in his family, his wife and so forth. Well, it would be probably difficult to be, very considerate and caring of a woman in the workplace and not the same at home, probably easier vice versa. I thought that was very important. What did you say about that?
Yeah, so this is, I think it'll surprise a lot of guys who actually read Good Guys, Howard, for this reason, because, Dave and I lead off the book with this set of ally skills, and it's not where men often expect they'll have to begin upping their game when we say, hey guys, you can't go past go until you show up as an ally at home first. And the reason we say that is that the evidence is so clear. Women on average, if they're partnered with a man right now and the dual career, both working full time, chances are she's doing about 50% more than he of domestic work and childcare and now homeschooling, which is putting women back even further. Until we correct that, until men share more fully with their partners, if they're partnered with a woman, we have, I think the latest estimates from the World Economic Forum are 257 years until we get to just pay equity. So we are not going to level the playing field until we as men start really pulling our weight at home. And so our message to men is, you can't show up at work, as you were saying, Howard, and throw on the ally cape, right? And be the ally for women if you're not doing the dishes and taking kids to their doctor's appointment and leaving loudly. That's a big theme that we heard from women. Too often when men have an obligation at home, they sneak out the side door from work, right? And and make kind of a dirty little secret versus saying, hey, I have kids, I have responsibilities, I have to leave early, I got to work from home today. When men start doing that loudly, it gives everyone sort of an even playing field, especially our female colleagues that for years have been owning more of that obligation, the non-paid work at home. So you're absolutely right. We really believe that's fundamental. I think you got to start there if you're partnered.
And it goes beyond, even just the physical tasks we can think of, right, of taking care of kids and the chores and household duties. There's a lot of the emotional labor, right, that goes into kind of keeping track of everything in a household, of running and organizing in a household and planning events and all of these things. And we had so many women tell us, it just takes up so much of their cognitive, this cognitive labor that they have to engage in. And you're right, because if I have to keep track of all of these different events and all of these things and keep an idea of what's going on with the kids and their schedules and who needs what next. And yeah, that's exhausting. So it's more than just the physical. It's also the emotional or cognitive aspects that are really, really important too. And, I think, one of our good friends and colleagues, Eve Rodsky, her book Fair Play talks about this in particular, about this emotional labor piece and how we as, you know, as full partners, we've got to begin to own half of that. And the other part of this that's really important too, I think, is so we can think about how the impact of us as men, as allies at home, doing our fair share is important, both for the skill sets that we have in the workplace, but also for our partners and they're in, you know, fully supporting their own, their careers, right? So they can, again, have that equal career that we have, but it's also important for our kids. And this is the next generation piece to this that is so important for those who are parents, is that as dads, if we are all in, you know, equal partners at home and our kids see this, for our sons, they're learning a different perspective about what it means to be gender inclusive and the roles that we have at work and family and what that balance and that give and take looks like, so that when they go into the workplace, again, they're going to bring that with them and have those same kinds of expectations about what that looks like. And then for our daughters, it's important even there as well, right? For as dads, you know, the research is pretty clear here that, for our daughters, they're much more likely to go on and persist in their careers. They're going to reach their career goals and dreams and go further in their careers. And they're going to go into more non-traditional career paths and industries and professions than if not. So we have a, you know, there's a really important difference that it makes if we're starting at home, being for both our partners and as parents for our kids, and making a difference for the future workplace as well.
Just wondering whether you had any insight or data on whether guys who have daughters are a little, you know, have a better mindset as far as these things than guys who don't. Any thought on that at all?
I'm going to let Dave answer this because he's the only one in our duo who has a daughter. So I'm going to let him.
Well, and we'd have to let her chime in here to let her truly answer that question. But we'll speak from the research third person first. And so clearly the research shows, even with CEOs and executives and leaders out there who have daughters, that they're much more likely to have equitable policies. Pay equity is certainly much more likely. Women are paid more in those organizations, more likely to have parental leave. And so all of these things, it makes a difference, right? Because it's you've been exposed to it, you developed an awareness to it, and I think most importantly, it has become personal to you, and now you're connecting it to your workplace. And I think that's the key at the end of the day, is we have to figure out as leaders, how do we bring this back? And okay, it's important to me, but now how do I connect it to the business of what I do? And I think those men have done that.
Yeah, and on that score, of course, being much more inclusive and aware of these things, I would think, is almost certainly going to improve the team dynamics, engagement, and performance, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so this is kind of getting to the, you know, the personal motivation for allyship, you know, that we see over and over again, Howard. And I most easily connected just to increased empathy, right? And so you do hear men say, you know, it was when I saw my wife or partner go through this terrible situation at work, or it was when I became a father for the first time that boy, the bells went off when I said to myself, I don't want my daughter to have these experiences in the workplace. And, you know, in all honesty, Howard, these are sometimes hard conversations, because we share, you know, or men will share this with their female colleagues, or we see men share these things at women's conferences that we go to. And sometimes women respond negatively to that. You know, really, dude, it took you having a daughter to get you interested in equity and fairness and justice in the workplace. Well, I think for some men, the answer is yes. It took that personal contact point for me to really open my eyes and open my heart, right, when it was a personal relationship. So we have to have a little bit of humility for when we engage in these conversations.
No question about that. And it certainly makes sense to me that any change mindset or what have you is going to come from personal experience. And the deeper that experience is, the more likely it's going to happen and so forth. So again, this distinction between an idea and an experience is really fundamental. And so you, again, we can talk all you want, you can make all the rules, but again, you potentially falling on deaf ears unless those people really understand, which is what your book really tries to do, to get them engaged in that, to understand that really important aspect of it, and then engage in it, and which is, to me, fundamental to any behavior change. You've got to own it. You got to feel it. It's got to be important to you. Otherwise, you're not probably going to do it. You
know? Yeah. Because it directs behavior. It's that motivation to do something. It directs your attention, your focus. And it's just like everything else, you know, until you feel it somewhere and somehow, and you connect with it in a way that is very meaningful and personal often. And certainly sensing or seeing injustice with somebody who you value them as a person is going to do that for you, right? You're going to want to, all right, what do I do? What do I do to make this right? And it's certainly going to make you more aware when you go back into other situations, other settings, to be looking for these things now. And this is one of the things we hope that, you know, our book will do, is the message is, hey, we need to have more conversations about this so that when you see it, go talk to other guys about that and compare notes. And when you hear that from a female colleague, go, okay, well, this is what I'm hearing. Am I interpreting this right to make sure I've got this? And that way, then you can, again, now you see it. Now you can go, you can figure out, all right, so what do I do about it when I get to that point?
Yeah, no, I think that's really, really critical. And again, the sort of essence of your book is getting people to that point, which is where guys need to get to in the situation. However they do that. And then once they're awake, as it were, or tuned in, then there are these various strategies that might not be obvious to them that you outline.
Yeah, and you know, just to follow on with that, Howard, one of the big recommendations you may have seen in the book that we recommend fairly early on, you know, right after take care of stuff in your partnership at home, make sure that you are deliberate about creating a network of female colleagues at work. I think too many of us men don't do that deliberately, right? And so in failing to do that and take responsibility for it, we are also failing to get the feedback. We're failing to learn about the experiences of women. We're failing to do all those things that would help us with our empathy and understanding. You know, what Dave and I refer to as gender intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. I can't really increase my gender intelligence until I really and listening and learning and having these kind of humble conversations. Can you share with me a bit about what you've experienced here in our company as one of the few women in your department? I'm really curious and I'd like to know more about that. So if men are going to construct this network of women, they're going to learn more, they're going to be better networked, they're going to become naturally better allies because of the exposure piece you were talking about, you know, the hallmark of social psychology, the mere exposure effect, right? I just, I become more engaged and caring the more time I spend with these colleagues. The last piece of that is when I construct this constellation of women who have learned to trust me and see that my heart is in the right place and becoming a better ally, that's often the moment when I'm going to really start getting the feedback, right? So if I'm doing things well, or if I'm stepping in it, these are the women who have learned they can trust me enough to say, hey, Brad, whoa, when you said that in the meeting, no, it didn't land well with me, and here's why. And I can say, thank you. You know, for sharing that, I had no idea, or I've learned something today. We find that those are the guys who really start emerging as inclusive leaders in the workplace because they've arranged to get the good feedback from women they trust.
Yeah, and we're talking about the hallmark of really good communication here, which is respect, honesty, authenticity, right? And being able to have that commune with anyone, really, because if you don't, you're not going to communicate. You're going to get very limited communication or what people think you want to hear. And so that communication is a big part of any program, right? Like this, because you've got to start from that position of authenticity, respect, honesty. Is that right, David?
Yes. And you know, and it gets back to the allyship gap too. Communication is critical, right? The feedback mechanism, the having that trust. How do you know if you're being authentic if you don't have that reflected back to you in some way? Because otherwise you're just living in your own little bubble. And this is the challenge that we have today, is that we often see that men think and they believe that they, because they believe in it, that they are doing it. And that's not the case always. And, but we don't understand unless we have that network of peers and colleagues, of gender confidants, you can call them, who care enough to say something to us. And, but they have to be in your network and they have to trust you to be able to give you that feedback. Otherwise they're not going to do that. And we're really never going to change things, the dynamics there, without this increased interaction. But it gets back to, again, there's a little bit of a discomfort that men have sometimes, right? And this is what's creating the anxiety that keeps us on the sidelines sometimes, because we're just not comfortable talking about some of these issues and especially the more senior you get with talking about gender or women's issues in the workplace, and guys just feel like who am I to be talking about these things? And I'm just not comfortable talking about it. And so they just, you know, they back away. And so we've got to get to that point.
Yes. And I certainly understand that. And I think part of that again is the willingness to be authentic and you just ask what you need to ask and so forth. And also part of that, you know, communication is a two-way street. You know, whatever is negotiated between two parties in terms of the context of communication is what will enable it. And if there's blocks there because you don't trust each other, it's just not going to be there. And so it has to work both ways, in the sense, I would imagine, that when guys are opening up in a way perhaps they hadn't before, that women also need to be then responding to that in a respectful and authentic way.
Yeah, I think that's true, Howard. And you know, just in terms of the theme of your great podcast, How Not to Think, one of the really interesting How Not to Think things that came out of the research for Good Guys, and you know, we've touched on the concept of listening a little bit already in our discussion, but I have to be really honest, both in the work for Athena Rising and Good Guys, the listening thing has just shocked me in terms of women telling Dave and I over and over again in interviews, men don't do that. They don't do it well. And if there was one thing a male could get better at, very often a woman will tell you, listen. And when they said that, it wasn't listen with the intent to fix me or solve my problem. And I think we men, too often we've got the extra large gene for fixing stuff, right? And we just immediately want to know the problem so we can solve it. Women are, you know, in our interviews are saying, no, that's not really what I'm interested in. I'd love to have you be a better sounding board for me. Listen, let me bounce things off you. Show the willingness to do generous listening, just kind of be there with me and not make assumptions or try and fix me. That's been an epiphany for Dave and I, because I think we just did not realize, honestly, how bad we men are as a group at listening. And so, boy, if there was a way to establish that trust you're talking about, what a great starting point. Just work on that micro skill.
Yeah, a huge micro skill, which generally in the culture seems to be receding rather than increasing, right, with the way we operate a lot of the time and what we see in the media, where that is not about listening. That's just about forcing something down somebody's throat, which is, you know, very unfortunate. And, you know, my big concern is that's how we're training everyone to think and act. And it's the total wrong way. Certainly if you're trying to convince people, you know, yelling and screaming at them is not the way to do that. And, you know, I wrote a book a long time ago called Power Talk, The Art of Effective Communication, which pointed that out pretty simply, that, you know, yelling and screaming at people may make you feel good, but that's not communication, and you're not going to win anyone over who's sort of undecided. And unfortunately, there's too much of that in the culture. Something that I honestly think all of us could do better with, you know, all of us. And I get part of that is we live in a complex world and we got so much going on. We really have the time to sit and listen and not, you know, listen in a non-judgmental way. That takes effort. That takes effort, right?
Yeah. And it takes humility, mm-hmm. frankly, right? Because, and this is one of the things that came out, again, in the research for both books, is that these male allies and male mentors in the first book, in all cases, had a lot of humility. And the women talked about it in terms of things like cultural humility or gender humility, in the sense that they didn't make these assumptions about, well, you're a woman, therefore you must need or want something, this, you know, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And so they were really listening, back to the listening part, they were listening to learn. And it was, you know, one of the things I think was really kind of struck us in the interviews we did for the first book was that by the end of the interviews with the men, a lot of the men would just kind of go, you know, after talking about this, I really feel like, you know, I feel maybe a little guilty about this. I'm like, why? And they said, well, because I feel like maybe I got more out of this and I learned more than she did. And with the, again, the expectation that if you're the mentor in that case, that you should be the one conveying and guiding and providing information, and the mentee should be learning. But again, I think it speaks to the aspect of, again, this two-way reciprocal nature and mutual nature of the relationships where there's learning going both directions. And that's where I think, again, men understanding that we have a lot to gain by spending a little time listening and really understanding and learning, developing that awareness.
And I think that's really huge. I have a book out called I Think, Therefore I'm Wrong, which looks at, you know, cognitive bias and assumptions and all of those things. And the conclusion that I reached while writing that book, it just made it a little clearer to me that wisdom, that virtue is the basis of wisdom, which is what, you know, many great people of the past have said. And that if you are, you know, if you're humble, if you're respectful, if you're kind, if you're all of it, compassionate, all of those things, then you're coming from a position where you're not trying to defend or anything. You're just listening in a great open way. And I think that's absolutely, you know, we've been talking about humility and compassion. That's how you do it. You know, you can't be going in with an agenda in your head because you won't listen, right? You got to be open.
Absolutely. This whole conversation is reminding me that one of our favorite metaphors in this area, Howard, Dave and I have written a piece for Harvard Business on the Michelangelo phenomenon. You know, it's actually this really interesting piece of research in social psychology, but it's all based on the story of Michelangelo as a sculptor being quite humble just by nature. And he would actually say when a sculpture like David was finished, he was famous for saying, I'm as surprised as everyone else at what has emerged from this stone. I didn't have preconceptions. I saw my job as just removing the detritus and everything, keeping this beautiful form enclosed. And in our work on Athena Rising, that was sort of a recurring theme that people felt that a great mentor had been there just to discern who their ideal form was, what their ideal career path was going to be, and not make assumptions. And once I see it, now my role is to bless it, right? And to open the right doors for you and encourage you forward. And it was such a nice metaphor for the work mm-hmm. of a great humble mentor.
Yeah, and you know, it's bottom-up processing rather than top-down. You know, with top-down, you already have a preconception of what something is and that's how you look at it. Bottom-up, you don't have that. You just look at it and see what comes at you. And that's what we're trying to do, I think, and what you were telling or advising people, you know, men to do. And there can be no question that that is absolutely right in my view. But it needs to be said. It's unfortunate that it needs to be said, but we just have not evolved in a way where the majority of people understand.
Yeah, and it gets to a lot of, again, we see what's valued in the workplace and back to skills and traits and characteristics and leadership style. And again, the very traditional masculine hierarchical command and control, power down, power up, style of leadership of the 20th century. Maybe that worked for our fathers and our grandfathers. It's not going to work and make you successful in the 21st century, the modern workplace that we're in today. And I think this is the conversation we're trying to have with men about, look, we're here to help make you more successful, right? And part of this is going to be learning these other micro skills and behaviors that are going to do that. And again, it's not starting with command and control and hierarchy. It's going to be very different in terms of, again, your emotional intelligence, your empathy, your communication skills are going to be very different to be successful today.
Yep. And then we've all heard the stories of the CEOs who, they go into a room and everyone just knows they've got to say something that he wants to hear. If he don't, he shut up, and it's all his ideas and all that stuff. And, that's 50 years out of date, really. And that's what this adjustment is about. And although you are talking about women in the workplace, it seems to me that these principles you're talking about would just be general to anyone, any colleague that you would want to be on your team. If you're going to be a successful team, you got to trust each other. You got to believe in each other. You got to support each other. You got to have each other's back. You got to know each other. And whether there's one woman or eight women or 30 women in there, that's important. But it's important anyway.
Yeah. And this gets to one other piece that we have found consistently, Howard, that I think we, all of us men, need to do a bit of a gut check in this area. But it has to do with the implicit assumptions we have about what great leadership looks like. And as Dave was talking about 20th century leadership, it was more of the command and control. But there's a gender piece here as well, because I think there's an implicit bias that we have, both men and women at times, that women are not leadership material, right? They're terrific. They're wonderful. The women are wonderful effect in psychology. We all think they're great. But what I'm not saying is she's a terrific leader, right? Because of that bias. So to move forward into this 21st century thinking, men do need to stop and watch the women they work with and learn. Because all the data on gender and leadership is showing that women often, as a bigger group, have some approaches to leadership, being more democratic, relational, inclusive in the way they lead, that make us want to follow them. They're terrific leadership styles. Too often, though, we as men want to clone women in our image and not honor her approach and learn from that. So we have some work to do.
And I think partly that is because, years ago, decades ago, that's sort of what women had to do to get into the workplace, was to be like a man, almost, right? And you think of the leaders of, thinking of Margaret Thatcher, for example. And so that might have reinforced that notion that for a woman to be a leader, she's got to be like a man, which is simply not true. This has been awesome. Your book comes out in a couple of weeks, right? October 13, is that right?
Exactly right.
Yeah. And where can people, Harvard Business Review Press, which is great, where will people be able to find it? In bookstores, online?
It'll be in all the bookstores, but of course, sometimes it might be easiest, and especially in our work from home status today, to get online and get it, on Amazon or Barnes and Nobles, or again, wherever you order your books from, you'll find it there. It's available today for pre-order, and we'll ship out directly to you on the 13th of October.
Yeah, and that's good. We want you all to sign up beforehand so that all those sales that come out on the 13th will shoot you up on the Amazon bestseller list. We know how that works. And yeah, that's great. It's been awesome. I know you guys have got to go. I'd love to talk more, and perhaps we will. Any last thoughts from both of you?
This has been a delight, Howard. What a fun conversation. I you're the kind of guy Dave and I would like to just meet down at the tavern for a pint sometime and continue the conversation. I think my last word would be, you know, men really in a powerful way are the missing ingredient when it comes to gender equity right now in the workplace. And there's a huge opportunity for us to lean in and be part of realizing equity in the workplace if we'll engage.
Yeah, and I echo Brad's thoughts there, and the message really is that I think we as men have to begin to own this, as this is a leadership issue. This is not a women's issue anymore. It's not a gender issue. It's a leadership issue, and it's important, you know, from a business perspective for our own businesses and organizations out there. It's important for our national and global economy. But I think even more close to home, it's important for families. Most families today are dual earner, dual career, and we are punishing our families today by not providing equity for women in their careers. And we've got to begin to start doing that. So we've got to begin to own this as a leadership issue, first and foremost, as men.
Yeah, and I'd like to thank you both for the awesome work that you're doing. I think this is very important. And so I really appreciate what you have been doing, and I hope will continue to do. So good luck with spreading the word and the message and the book. We'll certainly promote as much as we can. And again, thank you for being on the show. It's awesome.
Thanks, Howard.
Thanks, Howard. Enjoyed it.
Great. Take care.